Is the coronation just around the corner? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of our Institute, fellow analyst, and my very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Gee, I sure hope there's not a coronation right around the corner.
Well, I wondered about that, Chuck, because we talk offline sometimes to come up with ideas for the program. You pointed out an article to me from an online page called thedailycaller.com titled, Have Our Presidents Become Kings? So I thought, well, if we're looking at this and thinking that the presidents are going to be kings, then perhaps possibly we have a coronation coming up soon.
Well, let's hope not. Although, you know, you and I mentioned this in Saturday's show.
Yes, we did.
We talked about how basically the presidency is becoming an elected monarchy. And this fellow sort of shares our opinion on that, I think. I'm sort of shocked that this article appeared where it did. This article came out of the Daily Caller. And the Daily Caller is I really hate to use this phraseology, but it's a conservative blog. Conservative meaning almost nothing these days.
Right.
If Mitt Romney is a conservative, then the word has no more meaning. And, of course, that's what he's touting himself and what so many pundits are touting him as these days. But the fact is, this fellow, the Daily Caller itself, is, I would say, leans a little bit neoconish. Would you not say?
I would say that.
It's sort of very neocon oriented. And if you want us to go into the explanation of what neocon means, that does seem to have some meaning. And it would take us the rest of the 15 minutes that we have. So we won't go any further into that. Let's just say that the conservative and neocons, they aren't really conservatives at all. They're big government. They're pro-business, but socialistically minded. Let's put it that way.
So in other words, they would be kindred spirits with one of the founders who also was pressing for a monarchy. That would be Alexander Hamilton.
Barry, they're Hamiltonian to the core.
Core.
I know people have wondered what that means. They've heard us say it. You and I have run into, for instance, certain state legislators that who we both like and respect and has been our friend on a number of things, but who have told us that they are great fans of Alexander Hamilton. And I know why they're great fans of Alexander Hamilton, because they recommended that we both read a book. This is one of those places where, for instance, you and I have, I think, both read this book. It is a book about Alexander Hamilton, written by a guy named Ron Chernow. It's very interesting. You can read a book, and if you don't read it critically, you can get all kinds of ideas that aren't necessarily true about a person. That Chernow book is packed with facts, but the facts are, shall we say, fashioned in a way to make, well, it's a hagiography of Alexander Hamilton. We really get the idea when you read about the part where Aaron Burr shot him. It's almost an apotheosis kind of deal, that Alexander Hamilton was raised to heaven on the wings of angels and now sits at the right hand of God, acts as God's own economic advisor. Well, yeah. You and I have read some other books that aren't so flattering of Hamilton and look at some of the same details from a different angle. One of the books that we did a set of reviews on our website, principledpolicy.com, was on a book called Hamilton's Curse by Thomas DiLorenzo. And it looks at some of the same things, although it really looks at Hamilton's record and the things that he said in a light that shows that he really was not the kind of person you necessarily wanted to be designing your government. He was really a monarchist. What's very interesting is that he gave a speech at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia in 1787 that apparently was so shocking that no one was interested in printing its content. In fact, I think maybe some people took some notes and discarded them because it was such an embarrassing speech, and Hamilton was so coldly received in this speech that he actually packed up and went home. And what he said in this speech was that what America needed was a monarch. He actually wanted a monarchy. And he also wanted an aristocratic hereditary Senate to be designed into the Constitution. Well, most of the people in the room, having just spent 8 years throwing the yoke of Great Britain, which had exactly that system, off, were not interested in delving right back into the same thing they just left.
No, not at all.
Hamilton spent the rest of his time on Earth attempting to construct a system that would look as much like that economically and governmentally as he could get away with. The way he intended to do it was by the method of packing the courts and having the courts interpret the laws that had been written in such a way as to negate what he wanted, to reinterpret them, to do what Thomas Jefferson called making the Constitution a blank paper by construction.
But that's part of the reason, though, Chuck, that our founders wrote our Constitution the way they did, limiting the power of the executive branch, making it second in hierarchy to the Congress, giving the president no legislative powers in any respect, except for the ability to write executive orders, which are only administrative functionalities for the executive branch of the federal government.
Well,
and to continue to make some checks. But as we've seen in our history, and especially in the modern era, those checks and balances have to be enforced by the other branches of government, and they seem to be abrogating their responsibilities to do so. So maybe I am right. Maybe there is a coronation around the corner.
Barry, we have nowadays, probably the imperial presidency probably really came into being with my estimation. It came into full bloom under Theodore Roosevelt. We do crown a king for 4 years these days, and it has gotten especially bad, probably in the last, since Clinton. Bill Clinton wielded the executive order like a sword, if you'll recall the comment of Strobe Talbot, a White House aide. Stroke of the pen, law of the land, kind of cool.
Oh, that was Bill Clinton's aide.
It was Paul Begala. You're right. You looked it up. It's Paul Begala. Sorry, not Strobe Talbot.
That's why we have such checks and balances here on the program as well.
That's right. My apologies, ladies and gentlemen. It was Paul Begala. Although all I can say is Tweedledee and Tweedledum. It's not surprising that I mixed those two up.
No doubt. Chuck, it's one of those things that we've seen abuses from time to time, and even the best of presidents. People want to idolize Ronald Reagan, but Ronald Reagan had his moments of imperial presidency wannabe. Obviously, Nixon did, Carter did, Ford did. They all had it. There's been very few presidents in our history who have been constitutional adherents, Charles, who looked at the Article 2 of the Constitution and actually realized, wait a minute, this creates a responsibility for me and puts limitations upon me as to what I can and can't do, and I don't have the authority to write legislation. That's reserved for the Congress, obviously Article 1, Section 1. My favorite president, and I've said this, I think, before on the program, is Silent Cal, Calvin Coolidge, whose one claim to fame in his one term as president was that he did no harm to the Constitution.
And that is the sign of a great president. People have asked me who my favorite president is, and a lot of times I've thought about it, and I said, you know, I think it is, believe it or not, Martin Van Buren.
Van Buren.
Avoided a war with Mexico.
Yes, he did.
By playing the diplomat during a very tense period between the Mexican government and the American government, and also brought a very deep depression, much deeper than the Great Depression, although much shorter. And the reason it's shorter is because of what Fillmore did, and that is Fillmore actually cut government spending, cut taxes, and just like Warren Harding, cut regulations. Did more than balance the budget, actually put money back into the Treasury. He gets blamed for the Panic of 1837, but it wasn't his fault. And the Panic of 1837, believe it or not, was actually caused by Nicholas Biddle's National Bank. And Nicholas Biddle, having lost under Van Buren and under Jackson, his predecessor, because Van Buren was Jackson's vice president, they lost the National Bank franchise. And so he decided essentially to attempt to crash the economy to show the need for the National Bank. So Van Buren kind of gets blamed for crashing the economy when in fact it was an attempt to nationalize banking, and Nicholas Biddle's personal attempt to bring down the economy that brought on the Panic of 1837. Guess what? I give Van Buren a complete pass on that and give him kudos for making the resultant depression much easier than it should have been. This is really far afield from where we're going, but who knows who Martin Van Buren is these days? When they do these rank the presidents in their order, Well, who always comes out on top? Franklin Roosevelt.
Roosevelt, who was a progressive and liberal. And
Lyndon Johnson, John Kennedy, Abraham Lincoln, all these guys who grossly expanded the power of the state and grossly expanded the power of the presidency well beyond its constitutional bounds.
Oh, absolutely.
If you disagree on some of these presidents, please write us and tell us why. You know, maybe we'll call you up and get a Skype interview with you. And we promise to be as gentle as we can while we dismantle your argument.
We're nicer than that.
If you take that position, there's one thing about having an opinion. You should always be ready to defend it.
Amen. Amen.
And I'm ready to defend my position that guys like Martin Van Buren, guys like Calvin Coolidge, guys like Warren Harding were much better presidents than they're given credit for. Harding also was dealing with a depression that looked like it was going to be worse than the one in 1929. And the fact is, he did exactly what Martin Van Buren did. He cut taxes. He cut government spending. He cut regulatory intrusion, and business took off.
So in other words, he didn't do what our founders blamed King George on, which was creating a multitude of offices and sending swarms of officers to eat out our substance.
That's exactly what they did, the exact opposite of that. They took away swarms of officers who would come out and eat out their substance.
Absolutely. Now, I think that's very interesting if you think about it as well, Charles. Because what we have here is the presidents we've listed, from Martin Van Buren to Warren Harding to Calvin Coolidge, have all been given very short shrift by historians as being ineffective or being not the greatest presidents in the world because they understood constitutional boundaries and they stayed within them. It's interesting how in our culture we are fostering a philosophy and a mindset that it's all about power. It's Darwinian, the survival of the fittest. Hey, if you can grab the power and you can wrest it and you can use it to get your way, then you're the greatest. And that's the reason why Bill Clinton will rank higher than Calvin Coolidge on most of these lists. But the real point is, we have to be able to have restraint and self-governance. And when we combine together in civil society, especially when forming a civil government, there needs to be control and there needs to be a balance between those various factions and those various powers. And that's what our founders put together in the Constitution. That's the reason why we hopefully won't be going to a coronation in this country anytime soon if the American people will get back to the Constitution and start looking at our candidates for the office of president based on how well they uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, which is part of their oath of office.
I've been reading another presidential biography here lately, and it's not a biography on the president. It's a biography of a period, and it's a period known as the Manifest Destiny period.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1844 to around 1849, and the president is another one that almost, I'll guarantee you, just about nobody's heard of this president, and yet he's probably one of the most important, not necessarily one of my favorites, but one of the most important presidents in American history, and that's James Knox Polk.
Yes.
Who out there in radio land or in podcast land has actually heard of James Knox Polk? I would be willing to bet that not 25% of our listeners have ever heard of him. And yet the country, the size of the country more than doubled under James Knox Polk. He acquired the Northwest Territory from Britain, who had a standing claim, from Spain, who had a standing claim, and managed to do it all without firing a shot. Obtained Mexico, what we call the Western United States, from Mexico, who had a very weak claim, by the way, on that territory, and who had already given up a big hunk of it, the Texas part of it, to the Republic of Texas in what was called the Texas War in the 1830s, and was trying to take it back, trying to rescind their treaty with the Texas government. He expended very little in the form of American life to do it. Now, he did have a war, and it was a war of conquest. So there's a lot of debate about that. This is the reason why he's not one of my favorites. But the fact is that he refused to do it on his own. He understood the bounds of presidential power, and he demanded that if we're going to have a war, Congress has to declare it.
Absolutely.
So this is a very good book called A Country of Vast Design. And it's a very interesting book. It's very factual. It's sort of engaging. So if you look around, you can find it at places like Half Price Books. I saw it at Barnes & Noble the other day. It's a good book.
And that's our book suggestion of the week.
Well, you know what, Barry? We are out of time today. All I can say is sign off. Please visit us at our website, www.principledpolicy.com, and join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.